devastating siege of the territory. And Yemeni armed forces launch a barrage of ballistic missiles at sensitive Israeli targets, saying their operations will continue until the regime's attacks on Gaza stop. Thank you for joining us. Israel's atrocities against civilians and the Gaza Strip show no sign of abating. The regime continues to hit civilian targets and medical facilities across the besieged Palestinian territory. The Indonesian hospital in Beit Lahia became the scene of panic and horror after its surroundings were pounded by Israeli strikes. The Indonesian hospital's director has warned that the facility will stop working within 24 hours as it's running out of fuel to operate its power generators. Services at Al Nasr Children's Hospital have been suspended as a result of the regime's attacks. A fire also broke out inside Al Rantisi Specialized Hospital for Children after it was hit in an Israeli raid. The Palestinian Health Ministry says Gaza's blood bank has been put out of service following a targeted Israeli strike. The ministry warned that the territory's hospitals will face power outage within the next 36 hours and will stop providing services. Gaza's government media office slammed Israel's strikes against hospitals as an international crime and violation of international law. This as civilians are evacuating northern Gaza for the south of the territory amid Israel's deadly onslaught.
The current situation is just like the 1948 Nakba. May God revenge on the United States of America.
My message is to end the war and establish peace for everyone immediately. This is a crime. I left Gaza and I'm now heading south on foot. I have diabetes and forgot to bring my insulin injection. I may die tomorrow.
Nearly 11,000 Palestinians have been killed since Israel launched its war on Gaza on October the 7th. Many of the victims are children and women as the regime keeps raining down bombs on residential buildings. Israel stands accused of committing genocide in Gaza. Lawyers representing a large group of Palestinian NGOs have filed a complaint against the regime with International Criminal Court in this regard.
We build our cases and gradually make our voices heard. We'll talk about it again, but nevertheless, what we saw after a few days made us think that we were moving on. This was no longer just a military operation with its abuses, which would amount to war crimes. We decided that it was beginning to look very much like an act of genocide. And when I say genocide, as detailed in the complaint, that is here and that I have sent to everyone. It's not a philosophy, it's not a thought, it's not even a historical reference. Genocide is what the treaties say and what international case law says.
The World Food Programme has raised the alarm about the dire humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip as Israel presses ahead with its deadly strikes. The WFP said all of Gaza's 2.3 million Palestinian inhabitants lack sufficient food and face malnutrition amid Israel's devastating siege of the territory. It added that 33% of Gazans were food insecure before Israel attacked the territory a month ago, but now all of them are food insecure. The administrator of the UN Development Programme also warned of rising poverty in the occupied Palestinian territories as a result of Israel's war.
I think after 1 month of this war now unfolding, first of all, what is quite clear is that on top of the humanitarian crisis that the world has seen unfold in Gaza right now, we also are beginning to see the development crisis that follows. The increase in poverty rates, the loss of GDP, the destruction in terms of infrastructure, housing units, Now, we are obviously just talking about Gaza right now. There is also the West Bank. Different conditions, but equally, this is the Palestinian economy, so to speak.
Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees said it is seeking nearly $500 million for Gaza due to what it called unprecedented devastation in the territory. UNRWA said, due to Israel's siege and its brutal war on Gaza, the humanitarian needs in the territory are colossal and grow by the hour. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has hit two Israeli Merkava tanks. In a statement, Hezbollah said they struck the targets in Metula military site near Lebanon's border. The group said its attack left casualties. Earlier in a similar statement, Hezbollah said it targeted an Israeli infantry unit in the region with missiles. This as Israel continues to carry out attacks on southern Lebanon. The area has witnessed exchanges of fire since October the 8th, a day after Operation Al-Aqsa flood against Israel. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement says the resistance group is an integral part of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. The spokesman for the movement's military wing says the group is standing next to the fighters of Al-Qassam brigades in the front lines fighting against the Israeli enemy. He added that the regime has been advancing towards Gaza from several fronts but has suffered heavy losses. The official also expressed the resistance group's readiness to release two more Israeli captives on humanitarian grounds. Hamas has already released four captives. Israel's repeated threats to the people in Gaza to evacuate their homes have already sparked international criticism, but the regime's relentless bombings of the Palestinian territory have forced tens of thousands of people to flee from northern Gaza to the southern part of the besieged territory. Let's listen to Palestinians recounting horror as they left their homes.
We left the area due to the intense bombardment. We had been holding on there for 32 days. Yesterday, we made the decision to leave because the bombing was very intense.
They show no mercy. Among the displaced are young and elderly women, individuals who have lost their legs, and their children who are too exhausted sitting on the ground. Some are carrying their mothers and they are unsure of where to seek refuge.
We've lost our homes. We've lost our children. Where is the global community? Where are our fellow Muslims? Look at us. We are Muslims, just like you. We are not infidels. Where can the people take refuge? They are living in tents, in the streets. We left our homes due to the relentless bombardment. Where can we go now?
Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and the Islamic Jihad have condemned an Israeli raid on Jenin refugee camp, which has left 18 people dead and over a dozen injured. Hamas said the Israeli regime will fail in breaking the will of Palestinians. The group vowed that it will continue to fight the occupiers until the liberation of Palestine. Israeli troops backed by armored vehicles and bulldozers stormed the Jenin refugee camp earlier on Thursday. The regime forces also targeted an ambulance. Following Israel's attack, Palestinian resistance fighters targeted an armored Israeli vehicle in response to the raid. Over 170 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces and settlers in the occupied West Bank since October the 7th. Yemeni armed forces say they have launched a barrage of ballistic missiles at sensitive Israeli targets south of the occupied territory. Spokesman for Yemeni Army Brigadier General Yahya Sari said the missiles hit military targets in the port city of Eilat. Sari added that the operation has successfully achieved its objectives despite the Israelis' attempt to cover up their casualties. Sari vowed that Yemeni armed forces will continue their operations until Israel's war of aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip stops. This was the sixth operation by Yemen's armed forces against Israel. Earlier the same day, Israel's military had said in a statement that a drone hit a building in Eilat, causing some damage but no injuries. A senior Yemeni official says the country won't stop confronting Israel's aggression on Gaza, even if it causes a setback in the peace talks with the Saudi-led coalition. Abdulaziz bin Habtour, the prime minister of Yemen's National Salvation Government, made the remark in an exclusive interview with Press TV's face-to-face program. He said fighting Israel is a sacred duty for all Muslims and Arabs. The Yemeni premier also hailed millions-strong pro-Palestine marches across the Arab world. He said people have thrown their weight behind the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, and his call for using Yemen's capacities to hit Israel. In the Canadian city of Toronto, Jewish activists have staged a sit-in to protest against Israel's onslaught in the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent, Camila Escalante, was there and spoke to us about the protest action. Let's take a listen.
This is a sit-in, an action that was organized by a coalition of Jewish organizations, among them Independent Jewish Voices, and If Not Now, among many others, and the support of the Palestinian youth movement. They're here saying, stop the genocide on Gaza, stop the genocide of the Palestinian people. And they're saying that they'll be carrying out actions every day until there's some change. And of course, they're also making demands of the Canadian government in Ottawa, saying that Ottawa and Justin Trudeau and this government is complicit in the crimes that are taking place, in the genocide that's taking place, in ethnic cleansing. And so those are the sorts of messages we're hearing here today. There has been severe suppression and repression of Palestinian activism on university campuses throughout Canada, including here in Toronto, particularly in the country's largest universities, such as York University, the University of Toronto. Students and student unions are being threatened.
Now, Iran's foreign minister has warned that due to the intensification of Israel's attacks against civilians in the besieged Gaza Strip, the expansion of the war has become inevitable. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his Qatari counterpart, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al-Thani. The two top diplomats strongly condemned Israel's brutal attacks against civilians. They expressed concern about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and the regime's targeting of women and children. The foreign ministers of Iran and Qatar also discussed political ways to end Israel's savage attacks and establish an immediate ceasefire in Gaza to pave the way for sending humanitarian aid to the blockaded territory. People across the globe have taken to the streets to voice their support for Palestinians. In the Iranian capital, Tehran, demonstrators condemned Israel's indiscriminate massacre of innocent children in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The protesters demanded an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and called on the UN to take action. Elsewhere in Nablus, people flooded the streets in droves, waving hundreds of Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Israeli slogans. Thousands of Lebanese schoolchildren also protested in front of the United Nations headquarters in Beirut, denouncing the killing of children in Gaza and Lebanon. In the Jordanian capital, Amman, hundreds of workers and patients from a cancer center staged a rally in solidarity with Palestinians. Protesters in the South Korean capital also called for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Protesters gathered outside the South Korean foreign ministry to show their rage over the visit of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken to Seoul. The protesters slammed Blinken for, quote, putting on a humane mask. They said Washington is making money from the blood of the Palestinian people by selling weapons to Israel. In a symbolic act, the protesters raised their blood-stained hands to condemn the U.S. complicity in the ongoing war in Gaza. An international charity organization says more children have been killed in the Gaza Strip over the past weeks than in every other armed conflict annually since 2019. The death toll amongst children in Gaza may worsen as a result of the ongoing Israeli aggression. Hundreds of children are still trapped under the rubble of residential buildings targeted by or during Israel's strikes on Gaza, and they have not been rescued yet, which implies the actual death toll could be higher.
Figures reported by the charity organization Save the Children shows the number of children killed in the Gaza Strip as a result of Israel's ongoing aggression has exceeded annual figures related to global conflicts over the past 4 years. The international NGO says that Israel's brutal military attack against Gaza, which began on October 7 in response to an operation by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas, has so far killed more than the annual number of children killed in armed conflicts globally in each of the past 4 years. According to multiple reports, including the Palestinian Health Ministry and the Defense for Children International, DCI, one child is being killed in Gaza every 10 minutes. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said in a press release on October 18 that since the launch of the indiscriminate bombing crusade against Gaza, an average of 100 children have been killed daily. Hundreds of children are still trapped under the rubble of residential buildings targeted during Israel's strikes on Gaza, and they have not been rescued yet, which implies the actual death toll could be higher. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said in a statement that at least 1,000 children are missing under the rubble in Gaza. The ongoing siege and the relentless bombardment are impeding search and rescue operations.
Gaza has become a graveyard for children. It's a living hell for everyone else. And yet the threats to children go beyond bombs and mortars. And I want to speak briefly now on two of those, water and trauma. The more than 1 million children of Gaza have a critical water crisis. Gaza's water production now, its capacity is at 5% of its daily output. So child deaths to dehydration, particularly infant deaths to dehydration, are a growing threat.
Well, that's it for this hour's bulletin. Take care for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
in the limelight.
Europe's shameful complicity in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza is quite clear. Today, European leaders have remained silent amid the Zionist regime's disproportionate bombardment of Gaza, while implicitly condoning the murderous language being used by the Zionist regime's officials. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, the latest stage of the massacre in Gaza has revealed an unexpected moral bankruptcy on the part of the European Union's institutions and almost all of its member states. In the past, Europe used to make efforts to mitigate Washington's blind pro-Zionist stance and to advance the Palestinian cause, such as during the drafting of the 2003 Roadmap to Peace. Two decades later, the EU and its top shareholders are barely recognizable. The last 20 years included the Second Intifada, Israel's destructive wars on Gaza with massive Palestinian civilian casualties, thousands of home demolitions, and creeping annexation through settlement growth in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds. Gaza has also been subject to a harsh blockade since 2007. Under these circumstances, logic would dictate that European support for Palestinians should have increased. Instead, Europe has become increasingly pro-Israel, or, in the best case, indifferent to the Palestinian cause. It speaks volumes that in the last two decades, the only significant EU measure has been, brace yourself, to request a change in labeling of the Zionist regime's products, ensuring that goods produced in illegal settlements are labeled as such. This was less than a slap on the wrist, but it still sparked Israeli indignation. The EU's political discourse on Palestinian rights has slowly adjusted to the Zionist regime's increasingly far-right narrative, with dissent and different opinions silenced or strongly criticized by mainstream media. The mere use of the word occupation or any objection to the Zionist regime's violence is equated with anti-Semitism. This charge is systematically used for character assassinations of pro-Palestinian politicians and activists through complacent Western media. Jeremy Corbyn, the former British Labour leader, is a prime example. Today, the Labour leadership's stance on the Zionist regime Palestine issue is barely distinguishable from Likud's, and Muslim voters are fleeing the party in droves. Other European parties across the political spectrum have followed the same path. A complete metamorphosis has taken place. Many explanations could be provided, but ultimately, European politicians stand with the Zionist regime because they seem to get in less trouble that way. This conflict did not begin on October 7th. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres had to shake the Europeans from their guilty torpor by reminding them recently that the attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. He said, "The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation. They have seen their land steadily devoured by settlements and plagued by violence, their economy stifled, their people displaced, and their homes demolished. Their hopes for a political solution to their plight have been vanishing. For these common sense words, the Zionist regime demanded Guterres' resignation. Meanwhile, a procession of European leaders have rightly traveled to the occupied territories called Israel to express their solidarity, including the presidents of the European Commission and European Parliament, the German Chancellor, the French President, the British Prime Minister, and the Italian Prime Minister. But we have not seen a similar procession of visits to Ramallah, as the Zionist regime's bombs continue to rain down on Gaza. On the European moral scale, Israeli pain is rated higher than Palestinian pain, and it appears nothing is going to change it. The European position is that Hamas committed an unprovoked act of terrorism, while the fabricated regime of Israel is just exercising its legitimate right of self-defense. However, the Zionist regime's right to self-defense, as they claim, must be contextualized within its role as an occupying power for more than 5 decades, during which it has harassed, humiliated, and killed countless Palestinians. This is the point Guterres was attempting to convey in his heavily criticized remark, especially to Western regimes, those champions of the rules-based world order. It is worth remembering that when Palestinians last held a mass peaceful protest, the 2018 Great March of Return, which followed the provocative U.S. decision to move its embassy to Al-Quds, the Zionist regime's army fired upon thousands of Palestinians gathered at the Gaza fence. The Zionist regime's snipers killed more than 200 Palestinians, including medics and journalists, and wounded thousands more. This was a despicable act, a crime, but no condemnation came from Western regimes. Today, European leaders have remained silent amid the Zionist regime's disproportionate bombardment of Gaza, while implicitly condoning the murderous language being used by the Zionist regime's officials, including President Isaac Herzog, who has said, "There are no innocent civilians in Gaza." He said, "It is an entire nation out there that is responsible," tacitly justifying their collective punishment. Of course, thousands of Palestinian flags are being hoisted by European citizens, largely unreported by Western mainstream media across European capitals. People are doing what their governments will not, condemning the Zionist regime's disproportionate retaliation and the collective punishment of Gaza's Palestinian population through indiscriminate bombing and the cutting of water, electricity, fuel, and food deliveries. All European institutions have been able to utter, amid heavy public pressure, are bland extortions for the Zionist regime to abide by international law. This is too little, too late, and too hypocritical.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio. And this is Umayya Biha Mukhtar, the host of your show today. And our guest speaker today is Sister Salma Khalfan, an Islamic researcher who is going to enlighten us about the status of a woman according to the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. It is very good to have you here, Sister Salma Khalfan.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Thank you so much. Allah accepts.
Inshallah, inshallah. So, we have a couple of questions that we wanted to ask you today, inshallah, and we hope you can enlighten us, because we have heard a lot of very enlightening comments by our leader, and we want to know more about it, more about the role of a woman according to him. So, can you tell us, with some of the topics our beloved Supreme Leader, our leader, has talked about regarding women, I'm sure with all the respect he has for us, the audience will be all ears if you tell us some things about what he has said regarding women in Islam.
One of the things that the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran really stresses upon is respecting women. He really stresses this from a very young age. And he says that respecting women means giving them the opportunity to develop at different levels their capabilities and outstanding great talents which Allah the Exalted has bestowed on all the individuals, including women, and the talents which are particular to them. So he believes that there are certain talents that are particular to women and they should be developed in all instances, in all ages. For example, as a young lady becomes the age of 9, she's now, you know, accorded for her deeds, right?
Yes.
Right? So she has this capability to understand and to realize and to be sensitive to what Allah has ordered her and to prevent those from all that is forbidden. So she has that capacity to, you know, develop herself in a beautiful way. And exclusively, Rahbar mentions the talents that a woman has. Try to give her this area to develop her talents.
Oh, so can you give us some examples of what kind of talents Rahbar talks about?
Well, Rahbar has not mentioned these, but we can say that these talents are so many if you go and see exclusive to women. First of all is that maternal strength that she has. Only she can be a mother. Only she can bear a child. She has to undergo all that, you know, process of bearing a child, holding the child in her stomach for 9 months, giving birth to a child, and then, you know, dealing with the child when the child is very young. She has that maternal strength Allah has endowed her with. So that's one of a talent, if you go and see.
Very true.
You know, all can't have that tolerance and that sabr that a woman has. And that's why while she's delicate in nature, in her physical form, but still Allah gives her this capability because he knew she has that capacity to, you know, bear the child, to nourish and nurture the child.
Definitely.
So that's one of the form of tarbiyah takes place through her. You know, she's the murabbi. She does that role of Allah. Allah is the Rabb. And he does tarbiyah. And he's manifested that in a woman to do tarbiyah of her child. Another thing is that to show love. And this is polished, can be polished through a tender age. A woman can, show love better than men. She's able to describe and to, you know, show the love to a person in a better way. And she can also do this, like develop her strength of loving through the spiritualities that, you know, like she has to do, perform. For example, when she becomes 9 years of age, I feel Rahbar wants them to grow so spiritually, you know, teach her how to be so much engaged in her prayer better than what she was performing. Every day should be a better day to comprehend all those deep meanings of, for example, Salat.
Yes.
You know, to know that who she's doing it for, all these things can be really like talk to a girl of, for example, 9 years of age when she's come of age. So this is polishing her that natural talent of loving. That's a spiritual embedded talent. Of course, we are coming to the other talents that even could be, you know, enumerated apart from this.
Because I feel like some people tend to think that, okay, are we only supposed to look at this aspect of a woman, that, you know, she's a good mother, she's a kind person, she's got more sensitivity than compared to a man. So sometimes people tend to think that, okay, we are only looking at that aspect, while women can be so much more, you know, they can, they have so much more capacity, they have a lot of more capabilities. So yes, it will be very nice to hear more about that. We're going to take a short break, and inshallah we will be continuing after.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So we have today with us Sister Salma Khalfan, who has been telling us a lot about what our beloved Rahbar has had to say about the women of today and what kind of talents a woman possesses, and how sometimes we don't know some of these talents, or we take them lightly. So, Sister Salma, you have been saying that they know how to show more love, they are able to engage better in prayer, and you have been telling us so much about these talents, but we want to hear more. Can you please tell us more about this?
Okay. Some people think that, these are the only talents. They don't know these are the major talents a woman has. Because as Shaheed Mutahhari states, that a woman, carries the man in her womb, and she brings up that man, and man brings up the history, right?
Yeah.
So indirectly, she's playing a part in history. She's doing the revolving.
She has
such a major role if she only understands her role, how important she is. So this is not only. There are other aspects of a woman we can talk a lot about. And before I come to the creativity part, that a woman can be good in an art or creating things, or, you know, like creating her home and beauty and, you know, making her home peaceful, the environment peaceful with her creativity, physical creativity. I'm talking about these things that Allah has endowed her with so much, you know, this kind of capabilities, that men might not have this much capability. Like we said, the maternal strength, men doesn't have that. The ability to show so much love and emotion, men doesn't have that much. He will hide it. He wouldn't know how to show it the way a woman can. And, for example, the ability to sympathize and empathize. How she's kind-hearted, she would like to sympathize. She can be such a good nurse. She's the nurturer of a child, for one. She can be a very good, person to help around, not only her family, but the society as well. And that's why the best role for a woman is to take up these kind of careers, like being a nurse, being a teacher, doing tarbiyah of children, being a doctor for women, you know, being a principal at school, to see all the girls being, you know, nurtured properly and like given the proper education and tarbiyah, what they need to know.
Yes.
So woman's role is very, very, you know, like scheduled according to her nature.
So I think what you're trying to say is maybe it is possible for women to take on very many roles, even the role of men, but it's not suited for them. It's not suitable for them. They're not going to be able to achieve and give the best of what they have.
Yeah, they're not going to actualize their talents. The actual talents will remain passive. But she will, of course. That doesn't mean a woman is not intellectual enough to become a pilot. She would be able to become a pilot, and we see many pilot ladies. But are they satisfied in their career? We see no one being so satisfied the way a woman is satisfied playing her kind of nature inborn career roles.
Very true.
You know,
I think the ideology is being painted as such that a woman is only respected or is only capable if she is as good as a man, or if she's able to be and do the jobs of a man, while we are trying to make everyone understand that this is not the case. A woman is strong in her own way, her own capabilities. She is a strong person as a woman. A woman is not supposed to be looked at as lightly. And I think Rahbar has always constantly been telling us that Allah has created us in different models. And although we are equal in other aspects, but we have been created for different purposes
responsibilities,
and different
responsibilities
so as to be able to reach our final goal.
And,
which is also
happiness.
Yes, very true.
That fruitfulness, that achievement of satisfaction is only through these kind of things. And if a lady understood this, she would be the happiest person. Rather than being tired and complaining at the end of the day, if she doesn't, you know, like she works things that are not meant for her. But of course, it doesn't mean that she's not allowed to. Sharan, she's allowed to. But the way she would achieve the actual satisfaction, Rahbar says, if a woman, if you want to achieve the actual satisfaction, you know, respect yourself through exposing your talents, and even people respect her through exposing her talents in the best way. Expose her talents, work on them, respect her because of that. You know that she has those kind of talents exclusive to a woman, which she needs to develop.
Saying made a lot of sense, but I was wondering if you could expound on the spiritual talents that you're talking about. What kind of spiritual talents should a woman have, or would a woman have, that would make her more lofty?
Yes, that's a good question, because we have the answer straightforward in the Holy Quran.
Yes,
that as far as her spiritual perfections are concerned, Allah clearly states in the Holy Quran, "Innal muslimina wal muslimat." Well, mu'minina wal mu'minat, they're able to have iman, they are able to have taslim. Wal qanitina wal qanitat, wal sadiqina wal sadiqat, wal sabirina wal sabirat, wal khashi'ina wal khashi'at, wal mutasaddiqina wal mutasaddiqat, wal sa'imina wal sa'imat, wal hafidhina furujahum wal hafidhat, wal dhakirina allaha kathiran wal dhakirat. A'adda allaha لَهُمْ مَغْفِرَةٌ وَأَجْرٌ عَظِيمٌ. That means, indeed, the Muslim man and Muslim women, the faithful man and faithful woman, the obedient man and the obedient woman, the truthful man and the truthful woman, all these characteristics are there shared. So we can't say that, you know, there's something like...
Specific to a woman.
Yeah, just specific to a man or a woman doesn't enjoy that. Otherwise, it would be just mentioned in a, like for a man, right?
Yeah.
But all these beautiful, lofty characteristics are her talents, actually.
Very true.
That she can also, you know...
achieve.
Yeah, achieve them. And if she struggles... And a patient man and a patient woman, the humble man and the humble woman, the charitable man and the charitable woman, the man who fasts and the women who fast, the man who guard their private parts and the woman who guards, the man who remember Allah greatly and the woman who also remember Allah greatly. Allah holds in store for them forgiveness and a great reward. So alhamdulillah, this ajri is there for both. So there's no something like, you know, differentiation between a man and a woman. All these talents are there embedded in her.
And I think both of them play a role in such a way where they kind of complement each other. And I feel like that is one of the main aspects that we have to look into, because many times a woman is looked at as somebody who just has to serve a man, or that is what is painted, and that is what people feel bad about or feel unhappy about.
Yes.
And I think when Allah kind of comes and tells us that, no, look, I look at you both equally, you both are as important, it makes a woman feel very much more, you know, happier.
Yes.
And thankful.
Yes.
And grateful.
And last but not least, I must add that Rahbar says respecting women means allowing them to develop these talents inside the family and in the society as well. And in the international areas also. And for the sake of knowledge, understanding, research, education and construction. So women is like told that you can develop yourself in all these areas, but your actual talents, don't forget to expose those that are really meant for your happiness in this world and the hereafter.
For your happiness and growth. Yes. Awesome. Thank you very much. And it was an honor to have you on the show. We have really learned a lot, and inshallah, we are going to implement this, and inshallah, we get to meet you and see you in the next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
In Britain, doctors treating sick children have warned that their health problems are getting worse as record numbers wait up to 18 months for National Health Service care. Meanwhile, thousands of NHS consultants and junior doctors are on strike across England in a dispute over pay as the health service braces itself for another wave of industrial action. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper, The Evening Standard, has covered this story and tells us more. The number of appointments and procedures cancelled due to National Health Service strikes has passed the grim 1 million milestone, with health leaders now warning winter could be really tough. The latest figures released by NHS England follow 4 days of industrial action, including the first coordinated walkout by medical staff in history. Consultants walked out for 48 hours on 19th of September and were joined by junior doctors on 20th of September. The junior doctors' strike then continued until 7 a.m. local time on 23rd of September. Some 129,913 inpatient and outpatient hospital appointments in England had to be rescheduled during the 4-day industrial action. According to NHS England, there were also 3,581 further cancellations in mental health, learning disability and community settings, though this is likely to include a small amount of double counting. The number of inpatient and outpatient appointments cancelled in England since the current spell of industrial action began in the National Health Service in December of 2022 now stands at 1.01 million. If the community and mental health figures are included, the total rises to almost 1.1 million, though this will not reflect the overall number of actual cancellations due to some duplication of data. The British Medical Association, the BMA, said junior doctors and consultants will stage another coordinated walkout on 2nd, 3rd and 4th of October. Regrettably, the British Medical Association is threatening to escalate industrial action again next month, which would mean the number of cancellations rising further and adding to pressure on health services as the British people head into the winter. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. Britain's Health Secretary Steve Barclay said today marks the grim milestone of over 1 million appointments cancelled as a result of strikes. With coordinated and calculated industrial action by the British Medical Association creating further disruption and misery for patients and NHS colleagues. Steve Barclay added, regrettably, the British Medical Association is threatening to escalate strike action again next month, which would mean the number of cancellations rising further and adding to the pressures on health services as we head into winter. Steve Barclay claimed medics have received a fair and reasonable pay rise as recommended by the independent pay review bodies. British Medical Association Council Chairman Professor Phil Banfield said, as NHS doctors, we have spent a great deal of the last 10 years apologising to our patients for waiting lists and cancelled appointments as the NHS struggles to keep up with increasing demand and the effects of underinvestment when judged against comparable nations. Professor Phil Banfield added, the last thing we ever want is to cause further disruption to patients in our care, and I'm extremely sorry that it has come to this. But these strikes are about the long-term sustainability of the National Health Service and ensuring there are trained doctors around to care for all patients in the future. Professor Phil Banfield added, it is doctors with their skills and expertise who have continued treating patients despite years of relative pay erosion. A pandemic that was a brutal experience for doctors, nurses and other carers, as well as for so many families. And the challenges of dealing with the worst waiting lists in the NHS's history, which have impacted patients' care across the last decade and more. Professor Banfield said, it is the government that chooses not to acknowledge the cost and value of medical care. It is in their hands to safeguard the retention and recruitment of doctors in the National Health Service for years to come. The longer the government buries its head in the sand, the more both strikes and waiting lists cost the public purse. It is a no-brainer to invest in the future of the National Health Service workforce rather than waste further money refusing to pitch a credible pay offer. Professor Banfield added, our door has been open for over a year and we hope for the sake of our patients that the government eventually listens to us. Forbes magazine has also covered the same story and tells us more. Saffron Cordery, Deputy Chief Executive of NHS Providers, urged the British government and the unions to talk urgently to find a breakthrough and to stop the industrial action. Warning that winter will be really tough, Saffron Cordery added, we can't go on like this, it's an uphill battle. Cordery added, trust leaders and staff need time to plan and prepare for winter's extra demands and pressures while working flat out to cut record-high waiting lists, instead of dealing with the unwanted distraction of yet more strikes. Patients with more serious conditions who were spared disruption before are being hit by the latest walkouts. The consequences of each successive strike are deeper and wider and take longer to sort out and add to the trust's mounting costs. Saffron Cordery said, "Trust leaders understand why so many staff feel driven to take to the picket lines, but the longer this damaging deadlock between the government and the union drags on, the worse it will be for patients and for the National Health Service in the long run." NHS National Medical Director for Secondary Care and Transformation, Dr. Vin Diwakar, said the milestone reveals just part of the relentless impact of strikes over the last 10 months. Dr. Diwakar added, "We know that each appointment rescheduled is incredibly difficult for patients and families as we prepare for further joint action in the coming days. There is precious little time for staff and services to recover." Rory Dayton, director of the Acute Network at the NHS Confederation, said, "We knew that this first ever joint strike action would create a high risk of patients as well as a higher number of appointments and operations being cancelled." Rory Dayton added, "The figures prove the effect it is having on public health, and the growing concern coming out of these strikes continues to be the long-term impact, getting back on track with reducing waiting lists, improving staff morale, and boosting patient satisfaction." Rory Dayton added, "The data today, however, will not show the true cost in terms of money and even cancellations, with strikes estimated to cost more than £1 billion already and rising. This will hit already stretched National Health Service budgets, and if this continues, it will either increase deficits or lead to cutbacks elsewhere. As well as this, we know that the true scale of the cancelled appointments could be much higher, with the official figures only recording cancellations on the day." Elsewhere, within the NHS, radiographers across 37 NHS trusts will strike for one day on 3rd of October, while specialists, associate specialists and speciality doctors are being balloted on industrial action.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines on Press TV: Israel targets patients and medical staff in its new attacks on hospitals in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war enters its 35th day. The World Food Programme says all of Gaza's 2.3 million inhabitants lack sufficient food and face malnutrition.